Have you ever felt in your prayer like God's not listening? Do you ever feel like God hears other people's prayers before yours? Or maybe other people's prayers are more important or more effective? Or perhaps you feel that God totally ignores you when you pray? Sirach, in our first reading today, reminds us how God hears us and what is required of us for our prayers to be effective. And firstly, he reminds us that he doesn't play favorites. Now, would you ask the Pope to pray for you over a priest? I don't know about you, but I might be tempted to. I might think, you know, the Pope's prayers are maybe more effective than the priest's. Or let's say I ran into Mother Teresa during her life. Would I ask her to pray for me and think, you know, somehow her prayers are a little more effective than my own mother's? Does God hear one person's prayers more than another's? Remember that the Lord knows no favorites. Why? Because in a sense, we're all in the same boat, and one's person's prayers is just as good as another person's prayers. We're all sinners. They're all sinners' prayers to God. God doesn't ignore your prayer because he doesn't like you or because you fit a certain class or a certain label. We see this in the gospel today. You expect that maybe a Pharisee, a Jewish leader, he's up at the higher echelons of Jewish society, should know all about prayer. And then on the other end, you have this tax collector who's this big sinner. He's extorting people. Whose prayer do you think will be heard more? And yet, Jesus turns it around, doesn't he? It's the tax collector's prayers that are heard. Why? Because he humbles himself. And yet we know at the same time that conforming our lives to Christ, that is, being more in the image of Christ, makes us closer to God. And in a way, our prayers are more effective when we are closer to God. I think about it, the Last Supper. Jesus says that one of the disciples is going to betray him, and all the other disciples, they think, well, who is it? And you know who they asked to ask Jesus for them? John. John, the beloved disciple, the one who was sitting closest to Jesus, who was his quote-unquote favorite. So does God play favorites? While some people might have a greater intercession with God, that doesn't mean that God picks one person's prayers over another. And it never means that he doesn't hear you. Our first reading also reminds us that he is partial towards the weak and oppressed. It says this in Sirach, and it's worded kind of strangely. Though not unduly partial towards the weak, yet he hears the cry of the oppressed. It's one of those double negatives. Don't you guys hate those? In life in general. I'm just sure that when I die and I go before Jesus to be judged, he's going to ask me this. Did you not serve me in your life? And I'm going to stutter and go, oh no, what do I say? Because it's one of those double negatives. And then eventually I'm going to realize I got a 50-50 chance and just guess. But what this verse means is this. That God has a particular care for the weak and the oppressed, but not to the exclusion of others. You know, this tax collector could have come to the temple and thought, you know what? I'm a big fat sinner. There's that Pharisee up there who knows what he's doing. I may as well just go on home. And we often fall into this trap, don't we? We despair. We think, well, I'm too far gone. Or maybe I'm too far gone in a certain area of my life, and I hope God hears me. Instead of having this confidence that the tax collector had, because he had humility. In the end, brothers and sisters, we're all weak. So if God has an ear for those who are weak, then all the more that we want to be, or at least acknowledge it, like this tax collector. Sometimes our most beautiful prayer can be when we say, God, I know I'm broken and I'm a mess and I need you. Now, Sirach also gives us two ways in which our prayer can be more effective. It says this, the one who serves God willingly is heard. You see, in our Christian faith, the idea of the will, our volition, our ability to choose, is very key. So much of our sanctity really revolves around our willingness, not our ability to be holy. And I think we often confuse that. Think about it in your own life. What is my willingness to be holy? What can I choose? And what has maybe limited my ability? I think of, you know, maybe like a and no offense to anybody who's older in our congregation, but I think of some of the older ladies in our parish who are homebound. They can't go to church. Sometimes they don't have anybody to take them, or they physically can't. And yet they're some of the holiest people in our whole congregation. Not because of their ability, but because of their willingness. I think of a child growing up in maybe a really good Catholic family, got a mom and dad, brothers and sisters, got a, you know, they pray every night, they go to church every Sunday. And then you have sometimes a child who, you know, comes from a single parent home. Not to say anything bad about that, but it is an effect on our faith. And they grow up, you know, hearing cussing all the time and seeing bad behavior. Which one's more likely to become a good Christian growing up? Do they have the same chance at being holy? And you might think at first not. I don't know. They come from pretty different circumstances. But brothers and sisters, what we're judged on is not our ability to become holy, but our willingness to become holy. God takes all those circumstances into account. And what he judges us on is our choice. Our choice to follow him or not. And when it comes to prayer, being willing to pray is sometimes different than the ability to pray. I think of a mother who's got a house full of kids and she's going from the time she gets up in the morning until the late at night. And I know moms who try to get up even earlier to get some prayer time in before the kids wake up. Or they try to get them to bed so at least they can have some alone time, and then something happens outside their control. That woman can be just as holy as a woman who's in the nunnery 24/7. Because it's her willingness to pray. It's her willingness to commune with God. She simply lacks the circumstances and the ability to. But our willingness also extends to our choice to sin or not to sin. Your prayer may not be effective because you have an outstanding sin in your life. If I have chosen to separate myself from God through serious sin, and then I'm coming to God in prayer asking him for something, I'm in contradiction. And to all some extent, we all are. We're all sinners. But have I repented first? Maybe I need to do that. Maybe that's what's stopping my prayer from being effective. Lastly, Sirach says, the prayer of the lowly pierces the clouds. It does not rest until it reaches its goal. Now, who are the lowly? Well, in our gospel today, it's the tax collector. Remember, he extorts, charges too much. He's all about his money. And yet calls himself a Jew. But what does he do in the gospel today? Goes and sits down in the back of church, doesn't even feel worthy to come forward. Although I must encourage you, the front seats are the best. And he sits in the back because he just doesn't feel worthy at all. And says to God, I am a poor sinner. He acknowledges the depths of who he is, the poorness of his spirit. This is why Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." I always wondered, what does that term poor in spirit mean? I thought, don't you want to be rich in spiritual things? It's when I come before God and I acknowledge my spiritual poverty. And that kind of attitude in our prayer to God is what shoots through the clouds and doesn't stop until it's not only heard by God, but in our first reading today, it says that it is also answered promptly. The prayer of a poor person, a spiritually poor person, somebody who's willing to humble themselves before God and acknowledge who they are, goes more straight to God and has much more effect than a person who thinks they're holy and is all prideful about it. You see, our attitude affects our prayer. Now, I've been known before here at Christ the King to end my homilies with a song that I play. But one of the songs that I wanted to play with this homily actually comes from a rapper. And I thought, well, I'd probably have most of the congregation over 30 walking out. But the lyrics really are beautiful. It comes from a Christian rapper. His name is Nate Feuerstein. He goes by NF, and he has these words to his song, O Lord. It goes like this. It's easy to blame God, but harder to fix things. We look in the sky like, why aren't you listening? Watching the news in our living rooms on big screens and talking about if God, you really exist, then where is he? You see, the same God that you are saying might not even exist becomes real to us, but only when we're dying in bed. When you're healthy, it's like we don't really care for him, and then leave me alone, God, and I'll call you when I need you again, which is funny. Everyone will sleep in the pews. And then blame God for our problems like he's sleeping on you. We turn our backs on him. What do you expect him to do? It's hard to answer prayers when nobody's praying to you. Maybe your prayer has faltered lately. Maybe you've stopped praying altogether because you feel like God's just not listening. Or maybe you become doubtful of your effectiveness in your prayer. If that is true, then this is God's word to you today. Remember that I love you. I want a deep relationship with you, just as close as Mary is to his son Jesus. And that relationship can be yours if you're willing to humbly admit who you are, where you are and what you are, so that God can determine where you're going.